Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Ladies and gentlemen, day one of what we hope is about a 2 or 3 or 4 day fundraiser, and this is the time that we ask you to go to your phones and support public radio. We have a wonderful guest here named Tara Brockman, who has written a book called The Seasons on Henry's Farm, A Year of Food and Life on a Sustainable Farm. It's just a wonderful book. It has a foreword by Deborah Madison. And Sarah Noss is joining us. She's director of the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so before we start talking about this book, which I swear to God, I feel like I've lived on a farm in central Illinois for a year after having read this wonderful thing, we want to ask you to go to your telephones. We at KSFR, as you probably have been hearing if you've been tuned in before this program today and talking to Dan Garrity and Bill Dupuy and the many others at KSFR who are telling you this, we're in a bit of a financial crunch, and so we're asking people to help out by making a donation, and it's very easy to do. You call 505-428-1393. 505-428-1393. You can also very easily go to ksfr.org and make a pledge. $100,000 goal is what we have to do now. We've had three fund drives this year, three one-day fund drives. We've gone to the one-day fund drive model, which has been wonderful. And in those 3 days, we raised about $40,000 each day. We did $120,000 in 3 days, which is wonderful. We only have to do 100 now. So in theory, we could do that in 2-point-something-or-other days. Realistically, we might have to go to the end of the week, but it will take only you, dear listener, to make that happen. So please go to your telephone right now. We have a goal for this hour of $1,500. We have a couple of copies of this great book by Tara Brockman. We also have some copies of, it's called Henry's Farm, and Henry Brockman himself has written a lovely booklet called Solstices and Equinoxes, A Farmer's Meditation. A Farmer's Meditations, and it is illustrated by his Japanese wife, who's done these beautiful illustrations, and you get a feeling of the farm from that book as well. So go to your phone right now. Give us a call, please, 428-1393. If you like this show, if you wanted to stay on the air, if you like KSFR, if you wanted to stay on the air, this is no joke. We are kind of in, I don't know if we're in the hole, but we're basically down to a, how should we say, critical moment, and there's a thing they call cash flow. I'm not much of an accountant, but that's sort of where we're at, is to try to deal with our cash flow problems, and basically, above all, to keep this station on the air, to keep it thriving, just as the farmer's market is thriving, just as Henry's Farm in central Illinois is thriving. So 428-1393, and also ksfr.org. By the way, we will be happy to read your name on the air, but we'll be happy also, if you don't want to be mentioned, not to read your name on the air and to just count you among the many very kind anonymous donors to KSFR. So do it now. Let's get the fund drive over with. Heck, let's get it over with today if we can. It's a $100,000 goal, 428-1393. So let's talk about this film, this book, The Seasons on Henry's Farm. It covers basically a year on your family's farm in central Illinois. And as you write in the beginning, you left home as a young adult, came back after years of doing other things. What drew you back to the farm?
Largely, I think what drew me back was Henry, and at that point, his young children.
Now, that's your brother.
Yes, my younger brother. I have two brothers, and Henry's the younger. And at that point, he had three small children. And I also began to realize that the best food that I had eaten, even through all of my world travels, the best food came from that rich bottomland soil of our own family property there in central Illinois. And, you know, I started to think, I've traveled all these places, I've had all this great food, but nothing tastes better than something that you pluck immediately from the plant, from your own backyard. It doesn't have to be central Illinois. But I began to realize that really some of the best things in life were right there in my own backyard. And I think, like a lot of people who grew up in small towns across the country, you can't wait to leave because it's boring, right? And because you just want to see the world, which is a good thing and a natural thing. But at some point, I wanted to come back home and put down deeper roots.
And so this is a sustainable farm where every element is related to every other element in some way. So you have animals, and their manure fertilizes the crops, and the crops feed the animals. And give us a sense of some of those kinds of ways that the different elements of the farm relate to each other.
It's true. The farm is an ecosystem, and like any natural ecosystem that's in good shape, everything relates to everything else. It is a web of life, and if you pull one string, you pull other strings. And on the farm, a lot of people, you know, don't know how interconnected everything is until you live there and you see it every day. But one of the things I talk about in the book is how plants feed animals and animals feed plants. And it's a really elegant solution to problems of fertility for the soil if you have animals. And it's funny, nothing ever goes to waste, basically. I was at a program last night, actually, at Collected Works Bookstore, and there was a mention of agricultural waste, straw to be used in straw bale buildings, and I mentioned that actually nothing on the farm is waste. And that straw, if it's put back into the soil, actually builds the soil and the biomass of the soil and the fertility of the soil and all the things that the microorganisms need. And you can go on and on and on, but basically everything feeds everything else. And in the end, if we're lucky, our own bodies will feed the soil and new grow living things.
Yeah, your own bodies. And meanwhile, the food that you eat there is incredibly nutritious because it doesn't come from soil that's been killed or over pesticided or whatever.
It's true. In fact, I didn't put this in the book. I actually had to cut the book by 50%.
Oh, my goodness.
My publisher told me, which was maybe a good thing. But there is data that shows that the nutrition of our vegetables today is about 50% what it was before 1950, before chemical fertilizers and everything, because our soil has been depleted. And you can only get out of the soil what you can get into the vegetable. And so when you taste something that's just explosively flavorful, that means it's also a lot of nutrition. And in the same manner, if you pick up a tomato, usually from the store, and if it's tasteless, you might as well not bother because there's no nutrition there.
Exactly. And then we have to supplement with all these vitamins and minerals, which cost money, and then leave plastic bottles in the environment.
And may not even work. I don't know if you've heard. I mean, like, they did the study with beta carotene, which is a good thing. And combined with a carrot or another vegetable, it has a lot of antioxidant benefits. When they actually did the scientific study and had just beta carotene, they found it actually increased incidences of cancer instead of decreasing it like they expected.
Goodness.
So there's something about, you know, the complexity of nature and the food we eat in its form that we were meant to eat it in a cabbage or a carrot, not in a pill.
Exactly.
So it's very interesting.
Now, another thing that you have, your pest control is two doggies.
Well, that's for the macro pest control. for worms and things, for tomato worms, you might just smash them, or Japanese beetles, which are a real problem. But for deer and raccoons, we do have the
and moles and
and voles.
And voles, yeah.
Yes. We have really lovely dogs who do know that it is their job to chase away varmints. And so at particular times of the year when something's coming ready, and of course the raccoons are very knowledgeable about when the sweet corn is ready, and they'll leave it alone until about the day before you're going to pick it, and then they'll come and just rampage through it unless you have your dog stationed at either end of the corn, and the dogs will keep it away. So we put the dogs wherever we may be having problems. Right now the deer would be starting to come, and they love not only the lettuce but especially the radicchio. And so they will actually come and bite out the center of each radicchio head. And so you'll go down the row later, and you'll think you have perfect row of radicchio until you get right on top of it and you realize the core has been eaten out.
That's hilarious. They're gourmets. They're Italian.
They know what's probably nutritious.
We're talking to Tara Brockman about her wonderful book, The Seasons on Henry's Farm, A Year of Food and Life on a Sustainable Farm. Once again, 428-1393 is the number for the KSFR Fund Drive. And you can call. We have only a few copies of this book. I'm delighted to find out that the publisher has run out of copies because this book has been so popular.
Yeah, I went to order some more copies for some other speaking engagement. He told me the warehouse was empty.
I love
it. But they are available in bookstores. You should be able to find them here in Santa Fe, certainly at Collected Works, and then at other bookstores around the country. It just means the warehouse is empty.
Right.
Not necessarily the bookstores.
Right. So, and by the way, Tara Brockman will be speaking at the Santa Fe Farmers Market this Saturday from 9 to noon. There will be books there. If you don't make a contribution and get one right now, you can still go to the Santa Fe Farmers Market, hear Tara, and get a copy of the book. But right now, what we would love you to do is go to your telephone and call 428-1393. Make a pledge to KSFR. Make a pledge to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. And make a pledge to sustainable farming, because one of the things... And when you talk about the web of life and you talk about the ecosystem, the media are a huge part of that in terms of how do people even know about these things? How do they know it's important? Well, they go to the farmer's market, but they also hear about the farmer's market on the radio, and they hear people like Tara Brockman on the radio. And sustainable media are, in their own way, as important as sustainable farming, because this is how all the activities and all the really positive activities in this crazy negative community world that we're living in, which seems to be in very bad shape on lots of levels, but the positive and the things that need to be nurtured, we spread them around just here on KSFR. We spread them around like you may spread other things onto the field.
Actually, there is a quote. Do you know that quote?
Go ahead.
Money is like manure. It doesn't do any good until you spread it around.
Exactly. 428-1393. And we have a report from the control room.
I love that quote. Diane Karp called in again, and she adopted two Watts named Wonder and World Peas and wishes Radio Cafe broadcast on... will broadcast on 2 million watts in the future.
Diane Karp, one of the great members of our community, the director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, frequent guest on this program, doing wonderful work over there, and a great supporter and understander of public radio. And so are you, gentle listeners. So please give us a call right now. You know, even if you can only make a contribution, hang on one second, of $5, if you can make a contribution of $100, if you can make a contribution of $500, whatever comes easily to you, it's just wonderful to be part of KSFR. 428-1393. Go ahead, Marilyn.
And Juliana Coles adopted Down to the River. I'm not quite sure I didn't take that, so I can't fill you in on that. But
excellent.
Great.
So, Marilyn, tell us more about the Adopt-A-Watt program.
Well, you know, we operate off of Watts, and we're anybody who calls in and makes a contribution to KSFR can own a Watt. So we own the airwaves.
Excellent. 428-1393. You can get a Watt. You can name a Watt. there was a program where you could make a contribution to, it was an observatory, I think, and buy a star. And somebody once, many years ago, gave me a star, which I thought was a little odd. But a Watt is even better. 428-1393. Now, Sarah Noss is executive director of the Santa Fe Farmers Market. And you are basically giving people like Henry Brockman and Tara Brockman, the farm that they live on, a place to get their wonderful food to market.
That's right. We created a permanent, sales space down in the rail yard by building the farmers market building, which opened a couple of years ago. And now the Institute is looking at ways to support the agricultural community that feeds into that facility, since we have an 80-year lease.
Feeds.
We've got some work to do to...
Feeds into it.
Exactly. No pun intended. But now we've got some work to do to really shore up the agricultural community that supplies us with fresh food. There's a lot of stresses on the agricultural community nationwide, and especially here in New Mexico.
What are some of the stresses here in New Mexico?
Well, we're finding up north land is extremely expensive. Our farmland, you know, falls in some of the most beautiful little valleys and along wonderful waterways. And a lot of times that land is really targeted for development. We're finding that in New Mexico, over the last 5 years, we've lost about 200,000 acres of farmland due to development pressures. Developers are also seeking water rights to transfer into cities for their development needs. At Rancho Viejo, for example, they just bought water rights from a farm in Socorro to secure their development future. But when water rights leave a farm, the land is fallow and pretty useless. And we're finding that's happening a lot up north, threatening our food security.
So the farmers market, how many farmers are coming in every weekend? I mean, I'm sure it varies depending on time of year, but it's a really busy, bustling place.
It is. It's really great right now. We've got 4 markets a week going on because we're at the height of the harvest. But we deal with about 150 farmers from 15 counties in northern New Mexico. The majority of them come from Santa Fe and Rio Arriba counties. About two-thirds of them do. And they're coming in. There's probably about 100 of them right now at the Saturday market, with everything from, you know, chili ready to be roasted to the fruit's really great this year. We've had a wonderful peach year, wonderful greens, all sorts of stuff. We even have meat and dairy products at the market. It's really a fantastic place to go on Saturday. It's an incredible showcase of artistry, really, on the part of the farmers.
Tara Brockman, does it when she says artistry, does it feel like it seems like it's as much an art as a science to make a sustainable farm?
Definitely. I don't think people who haven't spent a good bit of time on a farm like this know how much it is an art and a science, and that every single day you're paying attention, because every single day is different and every season is different. And the artistry, even on a more literal level, I was at the farmers market here in Santa Fe on Saturday, and the same thing at my brother's market in Evanston, north of Chicago, is the way that the farmers actually display their produce. And Henry's very careful about that, and he has so many varieties of produce that he's always, you know, putting a red next to a green and a frilly lettuce next to a smooth, and, you know, the textures and the colors, and just creating this beautiful, really, work of art in the most literal sense. And
don't you have that the great wall of lettuce?
The amazing wall of lettuce. Yes. That's become one of Henry's trademarks. I don't know exactly how it started, but he does have some 70 or 80 varieties of lettuce, and he might not bring every variety to every market. Certainly, it's more at the beginning of the season and the end of the season, but he creates a wall of lettuce, so it's from about hand height to about, over the top of your head, basically, and you come up to this table that's about, I don't know, 15 feet or 20 feet worth of length and 3 boxes stacked high, and you basically are pretty amazed by the amazing wall of lettuce, and therefore, it got its name.
That sounds great.
428-1393. Please make a contribution to KSFR. Our goal this hour is $1,500. That means 15 contributions of $100 or 30 contributions of $50 or whatever you can do. 428-1393 is the number for the KSFR pledge drive. Now, how big is this farm, Henry's farm?
You know, at any one time, 10 to 12 acres in production, and at least as many acres regenerating. He puts on a crop of hay, basically, but it's a legume mix with alfalfa and clovers and grasses. So he does take off a hay crop. It's not entirely fallow, but it's the time where the soil regenerates and the legumes put the nitrogen back into the soil and the whole biota of the soil can recover, because he works it pretty hard. During the years where he's growing vegetables, it's, you know, a bed of radish, and 30 days later it's a bed of something else, and then it's a bed of something else. So it's not like planting your field once, harvesting once. It's planting and replanting and replanting. So in fact, the 10 or 12 acres would be, if you spread it all out in time and in space, it would be, you know, 4 times as much, perhaps.
Oh, how very interesting. Yeah. And so even the lovely manure isn't enough to fertilize those things. You have to let them go fallow.
You do. And Henry's a big fan of cover crops. And so as soon as a bed is done in the fall, like right now, you'll start to see a lot of the beds are green, completely green, with one or another type of cover crop, which will then, again, add stuff to the soil over the winter, too.
Your father was a scientist.
He was a farmer first, actually. Yeah. He grew up on a farm in central Illinois, as did his father and his father. So we are, in fact, the fourth generation.
On the same place?
You know what? It's a few miles in the east. But basically, my dad grew up on a farm and was told, you're a smart kid. This is a hard life. Why don't you get a job where you can be in an air-conditioned office and have a pension? And so he became a scientist and taught at Illinois State his whole career. And as soon as he retired in 1998, he began working on Henry's farm, which was probably his true love in the first place. But it seemed at that time that getting a PhD was the thing to do. And he was an excellent teacher. And But yeah, we grew up having lectures around the dinner table about botany and other science topics.
Well, again, reading this book, I mean, the art of it, not only in the way it's displayed, but in the way understanding that web of life, it's both science and art, but the science part of it. I mean, you have to be a botanist and a biologist and a chemist and all these things in order to really maximize the efficiency on the farm and see that all these things are working together in a harmonious way.
And yeah, a chemist and a mycologist. I mean, there's so much going on in the soil. And Henry does do soil testing, but he finds it interesting that sometimes his tests will come back from the lab and say you have a deficiency in X or Y or Z, but then he'll look up in a book and see that none of his plants exhibit that deficiency. And so technically, on a chemistry level, there's supposedly in our way of thinking about agriculture a deficiency, but because we have really healthy, especially the mycorrhizal fungi in the soil, which liberate nutrients from the soil and make it available to the roots. But in soils where you put on a lot of heavy chemical fertilizer, you kill all the fungi, or if you put on fungicide, and then nothing is available to the plants. I mean, like we say, it all works together, and if it's healthy, you know, technically they would say you have a deficiency, but the plants are doing just fine, so obviously they're getting what they need.
428-1393. I just got a report on this wonderful thing called chat on the internet that we are halfway to our goal, just about halfway to our goal, not quite. We have a goal of $1,500 this hour, so please call and make it. We're almost at $700. 428-1393, 428-1393.
And Mary Charlotte, can we thank a few people?
Yes, indeed.
Marcia Stark, who loves your show and the BBC. And Alden Hoyer and Anna Ubet.
Thank you so much. Thanks, all of you. Keep on calling. We need the phones ringing off the hook. We need $1,500 minimum this hour. If we can get to $2,000, so much the better. 428-1393. Now, nutrition is a huge part of what makes farmers markets important, and one of the things that people complain about sometimes is that the food at farmers markets is kind of expensive. You, Sarah Noss, have a food stamp program, so people who are on food stamps can actually shop at the farmers market.
We do, and right now we're offering a one-to-one match to people on food stamps. There's some federal stimulus money that's come in to the state, so somebody does a $20 transaction, we can match it with $20. So I'd encourage everybody on food stamps to come down and try us out. It's a really wonderful program that makes, you know, fresh local food available to people that have actually in the past not had access to it because the food stamp program changed over to an EBT card and farmers markets couldn't process EBT cards. But now we can, and it's opened up to the food stamp community, and many of them are coming out to take advantage of it.
And it is a quite amazing thing. Now, let's talk about the taste of the food for a moment. Do you eat all your... This is something for both of you. Is all the food that you eat basically coming from farmers markets and in your case, from your own farm?
Yeah, virtually all of it. You know, all the produce. I buy a lot of my meat there because I can't buy commercial meat anymore. There's too much suffering attached to it and too many chemicals. So I'm really grateful that there's a meat component at our market.
Do you have bacon there?
There is some bacon, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a guy, Red Mesa Meats, that sells bacon and some pork products. We also have yak meat, which is really delicious.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, lamb and chicken and all sorts of, there's buffalo also. So that's an exciting part of our market. But it's true, you know, something that's been picked the day before and brought to market, it just has a much higher nutritional value, number one. And but because it's so much fresher, it just tastes better. So, you know, I think if people would come down, they would taste the difference. The corn right now is just really delicious.
Yeah.
And the green chilies, you know, smelling good and stuff. So, but I think it's pretty well known that, you know, when you go to a grocery store, usually that produce could be up to 3 weeks old because of the transport of it.
Right.
So it makes sense that food at a farmer's market would be fresher and better for you.
Yeah, exactly. And it the supermarket, it might look good, but it's kind of like nice house, no one home.
Right. And packaged. And we don't really need more packaging in our land.
Indeed, we don't. Now, the number, once again, 428-1393, we need to make our goal of $1,500 to, I'm going to push up to $2,000 this hour. So give a call, 428-1393. You have in this book some recipes.
Yeah, I never meant it to be a cookbook, and I'm certainly not a chef, but it just seemed natural to intersperse the narrative with recipes that were relevant for that particular time of year. So at the very beginning of the season, when nothing else much is happening yet, you can get the chives, especially the Asian chives, because they're a perennial, and they pop up in the very first, you know, semi-warm days of spring. So before you can even get anything planted in the ground, you are actually able to eat something like the perennial chives. So I put in a really, all the recipes are quick and simple and things we do all the time that really let the vegetable shine. And this is a Asian chive pancake that my sister-in-law, Hiroko, and a lot of Asian cultures use. And it's so simple. You basically chop the chives into one-inch pieces and put them with a light batter of flour and water and salt. And then, of course, and make a pancake. It's a savory pancake. And then at the end, you use a dipping sauce of soy and sesame. And it's amazing. I mean, it's so simple. And you can put as many chives in as you want. So you can make it very green if you like. And it's delicious.
I love that there's this Japanese influence on Henry's farm in central Illinois, because your brother, like you, left home, traveled the world. He spent some years in Japan, and he married a Japanese woman and then brought her back to Illinois. And there's a real touch of that comes out on the farm.
A lot, yeah. A lot of Asian greens. I mean, there's a million Asian greens out there, different kinds of choy. And then the root crops. I mean, not only daikon and some Japanese turnips that people might know, but the burdock root, which apparently Deborah Madison told me that she doesn't think anybody in New Mexico is growing burdock, and it might be because, of course, we have a rich, loamy, sandy soil where the root can go down 4 feet, which is what it does.
Right. Yeah, that's not so easy here, if anyone's ever tried to dig.
Right, but we have burdock, and so we have a lot of interesting, in Japanese it's called gobo, and, you know, it's a very different kind of a crop, but we have a market in Illinois where people are, you know, from all different backgrounds and very willing to try new things.
Now, the farm is really labor intensive, and one of the things, I mean, reading this book, The Seasons of Henry's Farm, like I said in the beginning, you feel like you've spent a year on the farm, but one of the things that I felt while reading it is like, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to do all that work. It's really, really, I mean, human labor.
Yeah, and human labor is really the trade-off. I mean, if you're going to do organic farming, and especially diverse organic farming like this with a lot of different crops, you're basically substituting labor for chemicals.
Yeah.
And the chemical agriculture, which is what most of Illinois is, very monocropped, very, you know, intensive in terms of chemical use and fossil fuel use, is, you know, where you do go in 2 weeks, even if you have thousands of acres, you go 2 weeks in the spring, you plant it all, and then you go to your other job or you hang out at the coffee shop, and then 2 weeks in the fall, and you harvest it all, and you harvest 24 hours a day. I mean, you have this gigantic machinery, and it all has to come in, and so it's 2 weeks in the spring, 2 weeks in the fall. It's not much labor, but you've substituted chemicals for labor, and we think, especially in our current environment where people need jobs, actually, you know, labor is not such a bad thing, particularly
yeah.
if you're young and strong, and some people actually love it, and we get those kind of people to be interns on the farm, and it's certainly not for everybody.
Right, but one kind of imagines, I mean, you talk a little bit about the industrial farming where you have these soils that are depleted, or you have, on the other hand, these hog farms where the hogs are treated so poorly that I don't even like, as a major bacon eater myself, I don't even like to think about it, but pigs being so much like us in certain ways, and biologically as well as anything else. Producing huge amounts of sewage, and the two don't go together. And here we are in this world where if you make basically plant and animal production go together, both problems are solved without enriching agribusiness.
Exactly. It all comes down to enriching, meaning corporate profits, which is what's driven our food system pretty much from World War II until now, although I do think we're at a turning point where we, you and I, and every person out there can use their power of the pocketbook and can make choices to support a local farmer who's taking care of the land and taking care of animals rather than support a corporate system that is very much destroying land and actually destroying people as well, often the laborers on these farms or in these factories where the meat is processed are treated extremely poorly. We learned a few things from the egg recall recently. about the way people are brought in, and illegal usually, and used as disposable parts of the machine, and if they get hurt or whatever, ship them back home or whatever. You know, it's like not even treating humans as humans, let alone animals.
I think that's really important. You know, amazingly, in the Gulf of Mexico, where they had that huge oil spill, they said that really the only dead part of the Gulf of Mexico is at the mouth of the Mississippi River, where the fertilizers from farms up along the Mississippi have been washed into the river and are now going down into the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
So I think, you know, commercial farming is really bad for the environment in many ways because of the incredible inputs that they put into the soil that get washed into the water table. And, you know, small farmers, your brother's farming 10 to 12 acres. Our farmers are 3 to 6 acres primarily in the north here. And they are good stewards of the land because they put so much labor into it rather than chemicals, as you said. So I think that's a huge issue.
4281393. I think we've just come close to breaking $1,000. Let's keep going. We want to raise $1,500 to $2,000 this hour. Please give a call, 4281393.
Mary Charlotte?
Yes.
I'll pledge $50.
Yay! Thank you.
I love KSFR.
Oh, wonderful.
I like KSFR because it's local. And, you know, I remember when 9/11 happened, and it just meant so much to us to have an independent program on the radio so that we could really know what was going on. And I just keep thinking back to those days where how important it is to have local programming. So I'd be happy to pledge $50.
Thank you. Well, and Tara, look. She's
there's a connection, too, with 9/11 and local food on the Saturday after 9/11, people came to the farmers market in Evanston where we were, and they all started like hugging us, and I didn't know kind of what was going on until somebody said that they had went to get their coffee the next morning, and there was no coffee because the coffee is air shipped in every day, fresh roasted,
wow.
And the planes were down, and they said they suddenly realized not only was their coffee in danger, but their food supply, which is also shipped in, air shipped or ground shipped, was also in danger. Even in Illinois, which is a very fertile place, 95% of all our food is coming from far away. So our farmers are part of national security. I mean, we can all live without oil if we had to. You know, it might not be easy at first, but we could live without fossil fuels. We cannot live without food.
Exactly. And your brother is very, Henry, of Henry's Farm, is very conscious of energy use. And one of the things that he's doing is running, does he run his tractor on cooking oil?
Yeah. There's a neighbor who has a little operation out back where he takes the used vegetable oil from local restaurants and does the minor chemistry, I'm not even sure what it is, that turns it into a usable biodiesel fuel. So his tractor and his truck that goes to market are from the biodiesel.
4281393. And the Santa Fe Farmers Market, you've got all these different places and locations and times. Tell us about that, Sarah Noss.
We do. We have Saturday market year-round. That is right now from 7 to noon. Then we also have one on Tuesday morning from 7 to noon. Did I say 7 to 9 on Saturday?
7 to noon.
Yeah, 7 to noon on Saturday and Tuesday morning. And then we started a Thursday afternoon market from 3 to 7. That's a pretty small one right now because it's hard to get the farmers to come out in mass at first. But it's a really sweet market. There's plenty of produce there. That's down at the farmers market building, too. Then we have our Southside market in San Ysidro Plaza down by Lowe's hardware store. Near the Regal Theaters, and that one's on Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 6:30.
3 to 6:30, and so people are coming from all different places in northern New Mexico to sell their produce.
Yeah, they come from pretty much all the way up from the Colorado border down to just north of Bernalillo County to come sell.
Tara Brockman, author of this wonderful book, The Seasons on Henry's Farm. How did you start writing this?
You know, I started it probably when I moved back to Illinois. I'd been living in New York City and before that in Japan. And I came back home and Henry was beginning to farm. And every week I would write just a little something on what was happening at the farm and what was coming to market. In fact, at the beginning, it was actual physical pieces of paper that we hung from the rafters of the tent and the farm stand. But soon I went to email. And what I realized, every single week was so different, that every single week was a season to itself, in a sense. And what I realized also was that people were not as interested in what was coming to market and what to do with it as what was happening on the farm. They wanted that connection to the people and the animals and the plants and the weather and whatever else was happening. And I just thought I was just warming up, you know, to write what was coming to market and what to do with it. But that was what they were interested in. And getting that feedback every single week, I sort of, I guess, had in my mind, or people kept telling me, including the person who became my publisher, that I should make this into a book. I was too busy for many years to do it, but finally I took some time off and finally wrote it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just got a report that the phones have stopped ringing. That is not good. No, we need to have people be calling until the end of the hour. We've got about 20 minutes left until 9 o'clock, 428-1393. We need to make our $1,500 goal, so give a call if you would like a copy of this book. If you would like to, let's talk for a moment about this booklet by your brother, Henry Brockman, Solstices and Equinox, A Farmer's Meditations. And what's this book all about? Tell us about it.
Originally, my concept of the book, The Seasons on Henry's Farm, was going to include the farmer's voice at those four kind of cornerstone points of the year, the two solstices, the two equinoxes. So I kind of twisted Henry's arm. He's a very good writer, but he doesn't have time to write because he's a farmer. So I did twist his arm. He did write these four short essays about what is going on in his mind and on the farm at those four cornerstones of the year. And they were going to be placed at the four points in the book, until my publisher thought that it should just be one voice and my voice. And I kind of felt that Henry's voice, you know, from the horse's mouth, the farmer's voice, is so important that I decided to publish it separately as a small booklet. And so he does talk about what he's doing, why he's doing it at those four points of the year. And it does have beautiful illustrations by my sister-in-law, including a centerfold. Yes, a centerfold. It's a map of the farm.
Vegetable.
So it shows you. In fact, people have told me that as they read the book, The Seasons at Henry's Farm, they look at the centerfold in the companion booklet, and it shows you where's the bottom field, you know, where's the upper field, where's the packing shed, where's the stream. So there's a nice little map included in this book that you can, you know, refer to as you read the other book.
Right. I love how you're halfway between Bloomington and Peoria.
Exactly.
Doesn't get any more Midwestern than that.
That's right. But people are surprised, you know. It used to be the entire Midwest, much of it still is, a food desert. I mean, really all we have is highly processed, you know, wrapped up foods that are sort of useless. But now we are starting to have the same things I saw at your beautiful farmer's market on Saturday, which is, you know, artisan goat cheese and breads and meats and vegetables and fruits. And just, you know, we can grow this stuff. This country has beautiful, fertile resources everywhere, and we should be using them better.
428-1393. I've gotten a message that the phones are ringing. We need them to keep ringing. We need them ringing off the hook and to meet our goal this hour. 428-1393. I think there's another dimension to this which is active both on Henry's farm and in northern New Mexico farms when we're talking about animals. Now, there are many vegetarians and vegans out there, but probably many more of us are, in fact, meat eaters. And when an animal is raised to be killed, it's going to be killed. It's not going to be your house pet. It's not going to be a happy camper at the very end of its life. But I think it's also very important that the life that it does live until the day that it goes to slaughter is a happy life.
And it is. I can attest to how happy animals can be on our farm and other farms that I've seen. They live like kings and queens until the day when hopefully it's a very sudden, instantaneous a death that we could all wish for. And also I have friends who are basically vegetarians except for meat that is grown in this way, which is my situation as well. When I lived in other places and I didn't know who raised the meat and how it was raised, I didn't eat meat. But now I'm surrounded by people who raise meat in a good way, and I can visit their farms and see their animals, know where they're slaughtered, etc. And, you know, it's a way of engaging in the world that I think is actually pretty important to acknowledge life and death that's actually happening every single day all around us. Even if you're a vegetarian, there's been large tracts of land in the United States and South America that have been destroyed, and actually destroyed entire. There used to be quail in Illinois, and there's no longer quail because of fields that are full of soybeans. So even your tofu may have blood on its hands, so to speak. You know, it's when you look at the big picture, you see that a simplistic notion of trying to eliminate something that seems on the surface level to be a cruelty is not really. I mean, it's a larger cruelty to have no quail in Illinois than it is perhaps to eat a pig that's raised in a good way.
We're talking to Tara Brockman, author of The Seasons on Henry's Farm, A Year of Food and Life on a Sustainable Farm, and Sarah Noss, executive director of the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute. We're going to take a little break right now, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. And we're back at the Santa Fe Baking Company. And do we have any report, Mary Lynn? What's going on in the phone rooms?
Gosh, the phones just don't stop. Everybody's been on them, and including myself here.
Good.
Let's see. Let's thank Brian Egoff.
Thank you, Brian.
He adopted some Watts, and he's named them Mary and Charlotte.
Thank you. He's our wonderful politician here in New Mexico. He's our representative, state representative in this area to the New Mexico legislature.
And Rafa and Sally are
thank you
contributing. And Linda Larkin thinks you are just amazing, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
And Eric Witt and New
Yay.
Mexico's burgeoning film industry adopted say what?
Thank you, Eric.
And I have more.
Keep going.
Santa Fe Community College employee Liz Servio contributed, and she challenges other SFCC employees to support KSFR.
Wonderful. Thank you all, and keep those phones ringing. You can give us an update at the end on our money situation, too, on whether we've reached our dollar amount.
Will do. We're getting close. And we have, if we haven't already exceeded it, I haven't seen that. We have two more to thank at this moment.
Go ahead.
Elizabeth Dunham.
Yay, thank you.
And Ronald Duncan for Gowan Books. He wants to thank you, Mary Charlotte, for supporting all authors. And he contributed $72 because that is a symbol for creativity.
Oh, that's great. Thank you all. Keep the phones ringing, 428-1393. We will get to and exceed our $100,000 goal at this rate. This is absolutely wonderful. So please support Public Radio, 428-1393. Jan Willem Janssens has just joined us. He's the executive director of Earthworks Institute. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And here late in the show, we've got another 10 minutes left, but tell us what you've got some things going on this weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And what we're going to do is, many listeners probably know, we're still working a lot in the Galisteo Basin. And what we're really going to launch is the concept of a wild way across the Galisteo Basin.
Now, a wild way across the Galisteo Basin, that is a combination of animal corridors and water corridors?
Waterways and open space with trails and areas to enjoy the archaeology, maybe farms, ranching, and all those areas, as long as they're open and as long as nature, water, animals can live there and connect from north to south and east to west. And that becomes then a living movement within the state and the continent because it fits within ongoing pathways, you could say, for animals and across the Rocky Mountains.
Now, this is part of a really continental vision in which we can break up our world into states and cities and counties, but the animals and the water can't do that. They need some continuities.
They have no boundaries. They don't tell us where there's an administrative boundary, where they stop. That's often what we do, and then things go wrong. And so I'd love to talk with you maybe another time about this.
Yeah, we need a whole show to talk about this once our fundraiser is done, so you can make that happen, dear listeners.
Yes, exactly. And but one of the little things that I want to really share with people today is that as part of that, we want people really to experience this landscape. And we've done that, of course, over the years and with a lot of partners. So now, after $1 million of investments over the last 10 years and another $1 million of match that people gave, we have about 2 miles of restored streams, 100 acres of small wetlands and springs that restored, and 1,000 acres of wildlife habitat and forests and grasslands that have been treated over the last 10 years. And certain conservation partners like Commonweal Conservancy, the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, Santa Fe County, and the Nature Conservancy have, parallel to this, identified buffer zones, conservation easement areas, protected open spaces, basically, of several tens of thousands of acres in the Galisteo Basin. And we're coordinating with them to basically line that all up so that water and wildlife and people enjoying all that can in the future pass through the Galisteo Basin. And so one of the events prior to basically achieving that big vision and dream and maybe in the next decade is that we're going to have ongoing events that people can enjoy the archaeology, the history, and the great outdoors of the basin. And this coming weekend, one of those events is coming up.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, that is an event this Saturday, September 18th, in collaboration with Commonweal Conservancy in the Galisteo Basin Preserve, which is this new development that's being planned just west of Lamy, where we're getting together to enjoy hiking opportunities, to also see how an earthworks crew is doing restoration work and field monitoring on the successes of our work there. And the day will be introduced by Ted Harrison of Commonweal Conservancy, and then he'll invite Sherry Sheik, who will be there. She's a well-known archaeologist in this region, has worked a lot in that area, to give an explanation about the history of that landscape and how people have lived there, farmed there, and made a living over a long period of time, so that we can understand the different layered stories of history in that landscape. Then we will follow with a little explanation about the ecology of the place, and then we will tell people to join for different hikes. There will be moderately strenuous hikes and easy hikes for those who have that need and ability. And others may join our restoration crew for in-stream restoration work. And people can register by going online to our website, www.earthworksinstitute.org. And there's a small registration fee that covers the cost of lunch. So we offer lunch. And I think that's enough. Then by going through that website, people have a chance to sign up. And we still have a couple of dozen spots left. We don't hope to get more than 50 because then it will be way too much to handle. But
excellent. Well, and you know, we were talking earlier in the program with Tara Brockman about how farming work is really hard work. Most of us don't do, well, I don't know about most of us. I don't do any hard work. I walk my dogs and do radio. And that physical work, if you don't have the opportunity to do it, doing stream restoration, that's a chance to really get in the outdoors and start doing stuff.
Absolutely. And a nice thing of that is, if you come back to the place and you see that when a little rock barrier is set up well, that you can just dig down, probably now even without several weeks of no rain there. And after a foot of sand, you get water, pure fresh water, so nice that you can drink it. And that the coyotes start digging, that there's plants and sedges and willows coming up again that used to be there maybe in a width not wider than this table here from you to me, but now are spreading an area as big as this entire restaurant. And so, and that is just amazing. Within 2 or 3 years' time, you can make that difference.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. And I think when we talk about life cycles, our own life cycles, the cycles on the year of a farm, there's also these cycles that if you are living in New Mexico, you decide that you're going to join with Jan Willem and do stream restoration and so on, you can really see these changes and you can see these parts of our natural landscape coming back.
And it's really like gardening the landscape, really. It's all going back to improving the soil, making it make water infiltrate and create productive plants for animals, and then indirectly for all of us and for the larger landscape, because it all hangs together like one big system. And Native Americans really knew that. And so on September 25th, we're having a hike, and that's 2 weeks away, where we're going to take people to the Kennedy site, which is a very interesting site just west of Galisteo. And I already want to make a pitch to people to come together at 9:30 at the church in Galisteo on Saturday the 25th. And then we will have archaeologists from the Office of Archaeological Studies taking us to the Kennedy site. Santa Fe County provides access. It will be free of charge from 9:30 to 12:30. We're going to look at the historic railroad intersection there and how people 125 years ago started an entire village there. Right. That has existed for several decades and then collapsed. But nearby, there are also archaeological sites that we're hopefully going to take a look at. So gradually people get an entire overview of the stories of this landscape. And that's really what we want to accomplish, that people understand why we want to have this big wild way across the Galisteo Basin.
And we don't have a whole lot of time left. It's almost time for the show to end. But Jan Willem, I want to give you the chance to make a shout out to all of your folks who are part of Earthworks Institute and who are listening.
Yeah, because I really want to ask you all and beyond Earthworks Institute to support KSFR, because KSFR really helps us to get the word out and rally the community to support these wild ways and for animals to eat healthy and for people to eat healthy. So I would like everybody to call in and make a pledge to KSFR, and with that also support our work in the larger Santa Fe area.
And the number is 428-1393. Once again, 428-1393. I want to thank Tara Brockman, the author of The Seasons on Henry's Farm, A Year of Food and Life on a Sustainable Farm, and Sarah Noss, Executive Director of the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute, and Jan Willem Janssen, Executive Director of Earthworks Institute. Hey, do we have a report from the control room?
We sure do, and I don't know if you got my last chat because the computer froze on me.
Oh, okay.
We have only a few, like less than $200 to go to make $2,000 during this show.
Ladies and gentlemen, step up. We've got a minute and a half. We'll actually give you to the end of the news to make that $2,000 goal. Please call 428-1393. Any thank yous?
Yeah, we have four here. Janet Fisher.
Thank you.
Carmen Blue, who's a longtime listener.
Yay, thank you.
And Judith Galley from Houston, Texas.
Wonderful.
And lastly, Kathleen Banks, and I'm sure there'll be more before the hour's up. And did you get my email about going for another minute?
Yes.
Okay, great.
So we're going to go for another minute. 428-1393 is the number. And please support public radio. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm Mary Charlotte. You can email me anytime you want at radiocafe@ksfr.org. You can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/radiocafe. And that's a nice way to keep in touch with people, too. And people can make comments on the show. Although, we don't get all that many comments. Why don't you start commenting? Go to facebook.com/radiocafe and let us know what you think of the Radio Cafe and ksfr.org. You can stream the show anywhere in the world at ksfr.org, and we do have listeners all over the place. And let's see. Well, we've got the fundraiser coming up for the next few days. We need to reach $100,000.